This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Hey. They call me Hal. They call me Stacey. They call me Her. They call me Jane.
Hello, friends and neighbors. This is episode number 41 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
GP Oakland is next week!
Yay!
Thank God. I'm so ready to be done with work for a few days.
Especially after your near-death experience. How are you feeling?
A lot better now. Ready to play some magic.
Good. I knew you weren't feeling well when we brought up playmats and you didn't respond. Like, I was editing the episode, and I remember we made the crack about playmats, and like a full like 4 seconds went by, and I could see it tick down on my Audacity as I was editing it, and I was like, Chris, normally you say the word playmat, and she's fucking on it.
Right.
And I was just imagining you sitting there with maybe like a Kleenex up your nose and just like, oh, that's my cue.
Yep. Well, I actually got two more in the mail since we recorded. I got that one from England that I was waiting for. It was a John Avon, like, exclusive island mat. It's really nice. And then Norbert from Twitter, he sent me a side event playmat from GP Pitt. So it's very beautiful.
Very excited. Wow. Are you past 70 yet?
No, not yet. Goals for Oakland.
What are you going to play with in Oakland? Do you, like, plan out every event? Like, this week I'm going to use this mat.
Sometimes, like, I think about it beforehand. I'm going to have to noodle on which one I bring to Oakland. Maybe I'll put up a poll. Be like, which playmat should I bring to Oakland?
See, I do things like that. I was at a standard event this past weekend, which we can talk about, and I was using my Veraska mat, and it occurred to me that my sleeves didn't match the mat. And I have to say that I was twitching throughout most of the event. I was just like, I need green deck. And then before I left, once the event was over, I made sure to buy green ones so that when I go to Oakland, I will have my Veraska mat and my matching green hyper mat sleeves.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm very paranoid about that. And everything has to be just like so. Woman of Excellence this week. Chris, you actually nominated this young lady. I had not heard of her before you brought her up to us. So why don't you tell the world why she is so awesome?
Sure. Her name is Taylor Rose. And she is a streamer. She does a lot of modern streams. She either does, like, different queues. I think she's in the Modern League that's on there as well. She's an illustration student. And some of the things that she does on her stream in addition to doing modern is she'll do her digital paintings on there sometimes. And she'll also showcase other games. Right now, because she's a college student, she doesn't always have all the money to put a lot of decks together, so she'll accept donations sometimes so she can start building a new deck. I know right now she's working on a project that's called Project Malira, so I think it's like a green-white deck. I haven't seen a lot of it yet, but it sounds like she's having fun with it, but she's interested in elves. She's really fun, super nice, cute girl, love her stream. She streams almost daily. Her Twitch handle is twitch.tv/meowthid, and it's meow, M-E-O-W, T as in Tom, H-O-D as in dog. She does commissions for her art and other things. Her Gmail for that is tarose.art@gmail.com, and she also has an Instagram, I think, where she shows off all her stuff, and her username is moofs. M-O-O-F-F-Z. And I just think that she's really awesome and just super cool. Her chat seems really nice and friendly, and I would definitely recommend watching her stream.
That is so hard to find, like, just a nice, positive chat stream. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, and I don't know how these people handle it, because if it were me, I would just be swatting them all like flies over a cow patty. Because you know that I don't really stand for that, but it's like, you know, there are so many streams where the chat will kind of turn me off, where, you know, I have to close the chat out because I just don't want to see it. Like, I don't know how I would handle that if I were to start streaming.
Yeah, like, someone was asking her, like, well, why didn't you do this, or why would you want to play elves instead? And instead of, like, being like, oh, I guess you're right, elves is stupid or something, she's like, no way, elves is a sweet deck, and did you see all the cool stuff they could do? And I was just like, I love this, I love her, she's great.
Yeah, I actually just looked her up on Instagram, and she has all this magic-inspired digital art that looks really cool.
Oh, sweet.
Cool.
I hadn't had a chance to look at that yet. So yeah, check her out, guys.
I would like to add another woman of excellence to our list, two for the price of one today. I discovered this young lady on Twitter, and she goes by the name of Mama Magic, and she describes herself as being, "I'm old enough to be your grandma, and I play magic, you should too." She, swear to God, she just started a YouTube channel. YouTube channel is also called Mama Plays Magic. She has a really neat picture or header at the top of her page, and she admits to being a very casual player. She aims her videos at the kitchen table market, and you don't get to see a lot of her, but you see her hands. So, like, she has this, I guess altar is the wrong word for it, but she has, like, this little table with, like, her figurines, and that's sort of her set for where her videos take place. And she's done some unboxing, and she's talked about some, you know, she goes into, like, the book that comes with the fat pack and things like that. But she really does, she really is a mama, and she talks to you, and you do feel like your mom is talking to you. She has this very soothing, like, "Hey, guys, this is Mama Magic." And you do feel like someone's giving you a plate of warm cookies and talking to you about magic. It's very soothing. And you do feel like you're at home when you listen to her and watch her videos. So so if you are looking for a YouTuber with a very different approach to things, you can find her on Twitter at Mama Plays Magic, MOMMAPLAYSMAGIC.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'll have to find it.
Yeah, she's very cool. Like, I got a charge at her one of her videos because she's just so friendly, and she literally does it. She's like, "Hey, guys," or "Hey, y'all, this is Mama Magic." I love it. I love it. This week, we started learning more about Oath of the Gatewatch. This was the official start of Spoiler Week on the Mothership, and we have some new mechanics that we get to play with in this set. The first one we saw, I think they debuted this during the World Cup. It's called Surge. And the Surge is an ability that says you may cast this spell for its surge cost if you or a teammate has cast another spell this turn. So this, to me, makes it seem like we are definitely going to be playing some Two-Headed Giant at the pre-release. You guys agree?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it doesn't seem as broken. Like, it's a cost reduction mechanic, but it doesn't seem like it's as broken as Delve. Like, in a lot of cases, it seems like even if you do play the surge cards, surge cost, you're still getting, like, a reasonable effect for it. So what do you guys think about this? Like, is this something that you think is just going to be helpful in Limited or Two-Headed Giant, or do you see this possibly being good in Standard?
I think it could be good in Standard. I know the one card that I looked at that has it is that comparative analysis, so that you could draw two cards at instant speed, and I'm pretty okay with that. I mean, if you've already cast, like, maybe a spell that turn or a counter or something, then you can draw, you know, two cards on your opponent's turn, and I would love that.
Yeah, I'm always really bad at analyzing sets before, like, I see other people play with them. So I'm always like, this will be great. And then when I think through it, I'm like, maybe it's not good. And then it comes out in Standard and I'm like, oh, yeah, it is good. And I just never know how to feel about it. But I like Surge. The only time I ever play casually, really, is when I play Two-Headed Giant at pre-releases. So I'm very excited to play the mechanic. The thing that gets me is that it's kind of like, what is it, Awaken? Where it costs a lot of mana, and you have to have cast something else, so you have to have a lot of mana, but I don't know. I'm excited to try and play it at the pre-release. I'm excited for this whole set. I don't know. This is the first set I felt like in a long time where I'm like, yes, I can't wait to play with these cards.
Speaking of Awaken, I have to say that as an Esper control player, I've been really kind of disappointed with Awaken. Mm-hmm. I remember when the cards first came out, I just assumed that they would sort of be a shoe-in for the control decks, and now that I'm actually playing a control deck, I can count on one hand the number of times I've actually had the Awaken happen. Yeah. You know, otherwise, and normally it's like, I need the Ruinous Path right away, I need the Scatter to Winds right away. Mm-hmm. Maybe things will change when certain cards rotate, but I don't think the format is slow enough where you can really, and not only that, I don't think the cards themselves are that good where you can have some for the early game and some for the late game. You're usually only running one, and primarily when I've drawn it, I've needed it right away. So I have to say I've been disappointed with Awaken as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like a tough mechanic to balance, because while there are some cards like Ruinous Path that have pretty big effects for a lot of mana, it's also a sorcery speed card.
Yes.
Like, that's sort of how they make it fair. I think if we had a Hero's Downfall with that Awaken cost tacked on, it would be playable in every control deck, but I think it would be a little out of hand.
It's so funny how taking away that instant portion and making it a sorcery really did change, dramatically change, mm-hmm. how powerful that card was. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at it, it's not functionally different from Heroes Downfall. It does the exact same thing, and people won't even touch Ruinous Path right now. I think the one thing that's going to, you know, I think what it's going to take to make Surge playable for me is just asking a couple questions. You know, do you have cheap spells? Are you playing a deck that can afford to sit on a cheap spell in order to enable Surge? You know, that sequencing of plays. Is the Surge spell an instant? Do you have instant speed cheap spells? How badly do you need the Surge effect? I think those are all things you have to take into consideration when you play a Surge spell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it'll play pretty well with Delve for that reason. Like, if you have a good Surge card that slots into a control deck and you can, you know, either dig through time or Murderous Cut, something like that, or at the beginning of your turn and then, you know, Surge afterwards, I think that could be really powerful.
The next ability is called a Cohort, and we don't know too much about it. It looks like that you have to tap an untapped ally to make an effect happen. So the example that we have is called Munda's Vanguard. I still can't say the name Munda without thinking of, like, my Jewish aunt.
Munda.
Munza, get the allies. We're taking the Gatewatch. That's what I think of every time. And I can't help saying it like that either. Like, when we're at the pre-release, you know, and I draw this, you'd want to say, Munda's Vanguard? No, if I play this, it's going to be Munda's Vanguard. I don't know how to turn it off. I did that with Chandra, too. For the first couple times I played with Chandra, I would go, Chandra? Like, what the hell is wrong with me? But Munda's Vanguard, so you tap an untapped ally you control, and then Munda's Vanguard puts a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Allies really hasn't been a thing in Standard, but it seems like it'd be powerful and limited.
Yeah, I think it could be maybe powerful and Standard. I don't know. Some of the cards I've been looking at that they've spoiled already, all I keep thinking is, I just can't wait to play more elves. Because I'll still have some elf cards that are going to be usable even after rotation, and I'm just like, oh my god, I can't wait. Elves is going to be so badass. And I can only imagine if you have, you know, elf allies, and then you can just tap one ally to give each creature you control +1/+1 counter. I'm on board like 5 times. So I can't wait. That sounds like totally baller.
Did you see that Eric Froelich has been doing these Deck of the Day posts on Channel Fireball? Did you see that he wrote one about Abzan Elves?
No. Oh
my god. Yeah, buckle up. So this deck, I actually pulled it up for you. It looks like it was played by Team Serbia. It made top 16 at the World Magic Cup. It plays things like Dwinin, Dwinin's Elite, Beast Caller Savant, Leaf Gilder, 2 Nissas, 4 Shaman of the Pact, 4 Thornbow Archer. And here's a spicy one, Foul Tongue Shriek. That's the instant for 1 black mana where the opponent loses 1 life for each attacking creature you control. So you turn all your elves sideways and they'd be like, bloop, lose a bunch of life.
Love it.
Yeah, you should check this out. It looks like it's really fun.
I might have to.
Yeah. The effect kind of reminds me of Outlast. Mm-hmm. How Outlast looked really innocuous, and all of a sudden, like 5 turns later, you'd be like, wasn't that an 0-4? And all of a sudden it's like, it's now a 4-9, and you're like, shit. It seems like one of those where if you leave it alone for too long, it can get out of hand. Mm-hmm. Support is the next ability, and it looks like, so when a creature enters the battlefield, it has support and then a number next to it. So there's a 1 card called Gladeheart Cavalry, and it has support 6. So when it enters the battlefield, you can put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 6 other target creatures. I think this looks like fun.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's an elf.
There you go, Chris. You get to use 2 of the 4 new mechanics. Look at that.
I know, I feel like a Southern Belle with a fan right now. I got a case of the vapors. Love it.
You're in the South, and I'm having brisket with Aunt Munda. This is going great. And then, of course, the last mechanic was the colorless mana, which I understand. Like, I admit I don't really understand how some people are still struggling with this. But basically, right? Tell me that you're not seeing people still talk about this.
Yeah, there's still a lot of talk.
Yeah, so basically what it means is if you have the new symbol, and Huey Jensen has started calling it a wingding, which I think is fine. So if you see the wingding, that means that you have to pay that mana symbol with colorless mana. So we talked about Kozilek, and Kozilek is 8 colorless and 2 wingdings. You can use any color of mana to pay for the 8, but you need at least 2 colorless mana from the cards like Unknown Shores, the Painlands, things like that, to pay for the 2 wingdings. And it's as simple as that. So, We've also been seeing some spoilers. Are there any cards that have jumped out at you all since they started?
That elf that you just talked about jumped out to me for sure.
I like Linvala the Preserver.
You mean Thrangel?
Yes. I really like cards like Timely Reinforcements, like when you're losing, do all of these things and then stop losing. And she does all of those things too, so it seems awesome.
Yeah, I really like her. I was, you know, I'm interested in her for the flavor because she was a very beloved character from the first Zendikar, and she sees some play in Modern. And, you know, it's nice to see these characters that we, you know, have loved in other formats sort of return. It's nice to see that they're still alive and that they're still sort of helping in the battle for Zendikar. I think that's really cool. I don't think she's terrible. I don't think she's like, I think she's good. I don't think she's busted, though. I think her being legendary kind of keeps her from being the Thragtusk of this set, where you're going to jam four of her in, and then the game's going to go on forever. Yeah, the cards that I've been excited by are pretty innocuous. I really like the Spatial Contortion. That is the colorless version of Nameless Inversion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think this could have a home in quite a few decks. I think maybe, you know, maybe Modern Tron could use it. I think the Eldrazi decks in Standard could use it. It gives us something to do aside from Sylvan Scrying. I hate Sylvan Scrying. I don't like using Hangerback Walker in the deck. I would rather just have some removal spells that can, you know, help relieve pressure until I can hit the critical mass of lands that I need to start doing my thing. So I'd be very happy to use that card. A lot of people are really excited about Jory N. They think her art is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't say that I agree with that. I was actually also really excited about Immolating Glare, the white Doomblade.
Yes.
One in a white, instant destroy target attacking creature. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm going to play four of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, I can't wait to play that. What do you guys think about Call the Gatewatch? Two in a white and search your library for a planeswalker, reveal it, put it in your hand, and shuffle.
I think it's pretty sweet. I mean, we've never had a Planeswalker tutor before, so it seems really on theme and also potentially really powerful.
Yeah. I'm glad to see people are still excited about the set, given the massive leak earlier. Like, I was really worried that people were going to go into this and go, oh, yeah, that's not, oh, that card, yeah, I like that too. But it seems like they've made it, I don't know if they planned it this way, but they're definitely picking cards that we haven't seen before. And I know LSV, people were like, hey, LSV got a rare that wasn't, you know, spoiled, and that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of an anomaly, but I'm really excited about the uncommons for limited, but that's just me. I really like the cycle of the three mana cost gold cards that Marshall spoiled in his column this week. I especially like Reflector Mage. It's one, a white, and a blue for a human wizard. It's a 2/3. When it enters the battlefield, you get to return target creature and opponent controls to its owner's hand, so on the surface, it's like a strictly better Mana War. I'm on board already. That creature's owner can't cast spells with the same name as that creature until your next turn. So you get to bounce something, and then they can't replay it on their next turn. They have to do something else or do nothing. I'm on board with that.
Yes.
I have to say, there was some discussion about Linvala on Twitter, and people were talking about flashing her, and somebody was like, paging Brago. And I was like, oh no, don't give Hallie another opportunity to bounce something. Just Hallie's going to be like, I brought my cube to Oakland, guys. And it's like, oh no, oh, she's bouncing Linvala now. This is bad.
Wait a couple weeks. It'll happen.
She's like, it's already in the works. Putting your fingers together like Mr. Burns. So, Chris, you are prepping for your road trip to Columbus this weekend?
Cincinnati,
and it's Modern. Yep. And I understand that you took a stab at the Modern League on Magic Online. How did that go?
Well, so far, I haven't done so hot, but I've been guaranteed so far to win the first game out of the other two, but my matchups have so far been against Black-White Eldrazi, and it has been kind of a hard road. I'm probably going to have to fix up my sideboard to deal with that matchup, if that's pretty much what most people are going to be playing. I'll have to.
How many times have you faced it?
Just twice now, but I mean, even just, you know, during like the like tournament practice stuff, I've been facing it there too. So I'm just like, shit, is this a thing? But you can't change your deck, I don't think, until after you complete the league. So once I've done the first one, then I'm going to go back and maybe tailor my sideboard a little bit if this becomes like a really big issue. But it's fun because I got up this morning and I played, you know, another game before I went to work. I was almost late because of it. So I can say I was almost late to work because of Magic Online. but, you know, it's been fun. I've just been like having a good time playing, listening to Morrissey. It's been fun. I like that you can, you know, play whenever you want. You just have to play, the 5 games, and that's not hard. I could kill that easily, so that might become something that I'm going to start doing from now on, is just keep signing up for the league if I like this. So it seems pretty cool, and plus, I've seen some, like, more notable names on the list there, and I was like, oh, Gabby's on here, oh, Jeff Hoagland's on here, oh, okay, cool. Like, maybe I'll play them at some point. We'll see how I do. So I'm having fun with it so far. I was going to maybe try to bang out another game maybe later tonight before I go to sleep. And I would highly recommend it if anyone is looking to get into it. I think it's pretty cool. It's definitely going to give me some more practice with Magic Online, which I wanted. And it allows me to play Modern. So I'm totally down for it.
Yeah. I played in a paper event this past weekend. My local game store has an event that they call Win Free Magic for a Year. They have it the weekend after Christmas. And if you win first prize, you win free FNM for a year, free weekend win-a-boxes for a year, and then you get one free pre-release event for each set that comes out in that year. Wow. So it's a pretty awesome prize. It's standard. It was my first time taking Esper Dragons out for a spin on paper. It was a 4-round event. I was 3-0 going into the 4th round, and then I drew into the top 4. And so I beat Abzan, I beat Mono Red. I beat Mono Red with a Jace emblem. Mm. That was like a hug from Jesus, let me tell you. When you have an emblem that triggers just from you living, it's amazing. Where you're casting the most, you're casting Foul Tongues even when they don't have creatures. You're like, Foul Tongue, gain 4, trigger 5. And then, like, you're just kind of, like, doing stuff. You're countering insignificant things where they're like, you know, they have one card in hand. It's a Monastery Swift here. Silumgar, Scorn, trigger 5. So much fun! I had no idea being a blue mage was this much fun. So I beat Mono Red. I beat I beat this strange deck. It was like Bring to Light that also had Collected Company in it. He was just playing all the Colors of the Wind. And then Abzan, and then I top 4'd, and then I lost immediately to the Abzan player that I beat previously. So that happened. But I felt pretty good overall. I have to say, I've been facing a lot of Mardu lately. Like, I know Christy mentioned, you know, in the past you faced a lot of Lantern Control. I'm facing Mardu about as much as you face Lantern Ugh. Control. And I'm really, really worried about it because they destroy me. And so I'm hoping to God that this isn't a thing in Oakland. Otherwise, I'm worried about how well I'm going to do. But I do want to go back and talk about this Eldrazi deck, because you're right. Everybody's been talking about it lately. It's been putting up a lot of good results on Magic Online. So I'm going to walk you through it. So it's typically a mono-black Eldrazi list, but some decks splash for white. White seems to be the most popular splash. And the deck is made possible because of the processors from Battle for Zendikar, specifically Wasteland Strangler and Blightherder. And so you have things like Relic of Progenitus in the main, which you just use to start exiling their stuff. Mm-hmm. And then because of that, you can play Wasteland Strangler and Blightherder, and you don't have a really hard time getting the processing effects. You also have the lands, like Eldrazi Temple, which you get 2 colorless mana to spend on Eldrazi. You also have things like Eye of Ugin, which mean that your Eldrazi costs 2 less to cast. So, you know, you're able to play a Blightherder on turn 3 with the processor effect. You get a 4/5 on turn 3 with 3 colorless Eldrazi. Hello. and then you have things like Oblivion Sower, which in Modern, if you're exiling these things with Relic of Progenitus, it's not hard to get lands with Oblivion Sower. And if it happens to be a land that you can't use, like let's say it's a fetch land, you have Urborg, and Urborg lets you, you know, make that land whatever you want. It seems really efficient.
It is. It's like, dang. They're taking my Tron lands and my islands and stuff. With the decks that I've been facing, they have been splashing white to play Lingering Souls and Path to Exile. So, sad kitty.
Yeah, because the path, you know, gives them a card that they can exile and feeds the processors. Mm-hmm.
Sounds awesome.
My first response when I saw this was I wanted to face it, because I've been playing Ad Nauseam for a while, and I'm like, I think I could take this. But then somebody pointed out to me that these processors can take cards that are in suspend and eat them. So if you have a Rift Bolt suspended, or if you have a Lotus Bloom suspended, and you play a Blight Herder, that card is technically in exile, and they can put your Rift Bolt in the graveyard, and you don't get your Rift Bolt when there's no more Rift Bolt.
They just drink your milkshake.
Pretty much. And I was kind of like, oh, that's not good. You know, because we talked about that before, how people like to think that there's different kinds of exile. No, there's just an exile zone. And it can take that exile card from anywhere. That's scary stuff. But I still think I could take it. I still want to try. But this looks like fun. Would you guys play this?
I would definitely try it. I mean, I'm thinking about getting into Modern on Magic Online also. And it looks like this is only like 180 some odd tickets. So I would totally give it a try.
Yeah, the deck that I'm looking at online, that just recently went 5-0 in a league, $186 on Magic Online, which isn't bad. And I mean, I have the Ulamog, so if you wanted to build it, I'd let you borrow it. And I actually have the Oblivion Silvers too. Yeah, if you want to play this, just hit me up. I'll let you. I'll let you borrow it, and you can let me know how it goes. Do you think that this is real? Like, I mean, the buzz behind this is pretty strong. Like, do you think that this could, you know, become like the next Lantern Control, the next breakout deck in Modern?
It could. It definitely could. I mean, it's just got, you know, all the hand disruption and everything. Like, with, you know, you got Relic online, you're taking their stuff. It's a beating. It definitely is a beating.
Yeah, it seems like it might have problems maybe with, like, Mono Red, but you're playing Inquisitions, Dismember, Slaughter Packs. I don't know. It seems like a full package kind of deck. I would definitely be interested in building this and trying it out.
Well, yeah. Ruin Processor is an answer to Mono Red. That is the seven mana Eldrazi colorless. When you cast Ruin Processor, put a card an opponent owns from exile into that player's graveyard, and you gain 5 life.
Yeah.
And it's a 7/8.
No big.
No big. Yeah, this is one of those decks that I'm like, I'm horrified and amused by. You know, where you have that dual response where you're like, this is terrible, I want to play this. Like, you just don't know how to, like, you don't know how to feel. Yeah, so I think I might kind of cobble this together and see what's going on. I don't know if I'd play it for anything anytime soon, but I definitely want to give it a spin at some point just to see for myself. Scrabbling Claws in the main. Scrabbling Claws.
I had never even heard of that card before. I saw this
same. I had seen it in like a bulk box, like 35 cents water damaged, and I was like, oh, girl. And now here it is, and it's like making the deck. It's like, holy crap. Jesus, take the damn deal. So I figured it'd be fun, because this show will come out on New Year's Day, I figured it'd be fun if we kind of go back and look at the top 10 news stories of the year with the help of our friends from Hipsters of the Coast. They made a list of what they thought the top 10 stories were. I agreed with them, and that's sort of what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to start off at the bottom of the list with number 10. This was the $40,000 Seance Challenge. I don't know if you guys followed this at all. But there was a young man on Reddit who started off posting about how they wanted people to buy up copies of Seance and then offered to pay people to destroy them. There was no real reason for it. It was just sort of a weird request, and people were like, oh, Reddit, you're so crazy. And then this person came back earlier this month and offered to pay people in bitcoins if they were going to the Pro Tour, if they were willing to play a deck that focused on Seance. And the amount of bitcoins translated to about $40,000, which is almost as much as the top prize. This was insane. People did end up buying Seance out from many of the stores. People started building Seance lists, even though they weren't going to the Pro Tour. Did you guys follow this at all?
I actually first heard about this on your other show, Aaron.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was watching Magic Mike's that night, and I remember, like, at the beginning of the show, there were people in the chat who were just like, talk about Seance. And I was like, what is going on here? But people were, like, rabid about this. They thought this was incredible. And I remember, like, Evan and Ruben were laughing about it, and Erin was just kind of, like, shaking her head. And I was right there with you. I was just like, I don't get this at all.
Yeah, I thought this was incredibly stupid. Like, I thought it was, like, a fun little, like, you know, again, you take a second to be like, oh, Reddit, you're so crazy. But, like, I didn't think it was anything that, like, people should have taken to the level that they did, where people were actually buying out seance. You saw content providers on websites making seance lists, and I'm like, why are you doing this? And I don't know if it was just a slow news week or what, but I thought this whole thing was, like, deeply silly.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah. In the end, though, they did take the post down from Reddit, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody actually takes them up on it or if they actually pay it up. I think that'll be fun to see. Like, if you are watching coverage and all of a sudden you're like, you know, Paolo Vittar, Domino Rosa playing seance, and it's like, what? Like, I mean, that could make for good entertainment, but that's about it on that level. Number 9, Travis Wu's pro-Hitler rant. Oh, yes. God, girl. So for those who don't know, in November, Travis Wu was doing a stream, his own personal stream, and he just decided to start talking about Mein Kampf.
like you do.
And, you know, said a lot of things that were just completely ridiculous about, you know, almost defending the Holocaust. I think at one point he implied that, like, Jews might have had it coming, and just said these really ridiculous things. The backlash was swift. The next day, Channel Fireball was like, we really don't see it for you, girl. Got rid of Travis Wu. He's now doing content on his own. And this was a popular topic. You know, you had the two sides that were like, you know, this was a huge misplay on his part, good riddance. And then there were the people that were the freedom of speech people of he should be able to say what he wants to say and it shouldn't extend to his personal stream. You know, I don't think we really covered this, but what side did you guys fall on?
I watched about half of what he said. I was getting play-by-plays from Aaron from Turn One Thoughts. He's like, I can't even watch this. And I was just like, yeah, like, I mean, I can see where he was trying to go, but it didn't go in a good place. Like, it's one of those things where if you even question to yourself, maybe I shouldn't do this, the answer is you probably shouldn't do this just in case. So, yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I can see where he was trying to go, but I just don't think he should have maybe talked about it, because sometimes, you know, your intentions might be good, but the way you come off might be poorly, and you might say something that you might regret later. So I wish he hadn't done it. I still love Travis Wu. I still think he's a cool guy, but probably not the best move to have made.
Yeah, it's kind of like a you should have known better deal. Like, if you're going to tackle any, like, subject that could be controversial, I feel like you should think about what you're going to say before you say it for like a good amount of time, and I don't think that happened. I mean I'm all for free speech, but I also am in the camp of like shaking my head, you should have known better.
Yeah, I'm also in the camp of like, think about how what you're saying affects other people or is going to affect other people. I mean, full disclosure, I'm Jewish. I have friends and relatives and loved ones who have survived the Holocaust, so this was obviously very difficult for me to watch. I was actually really happy that we didn't talk about it on the show, because at the time I didn't think I was going to be able to talk about it without crying. But yeah, it was really tough for me to deal with this. I had to turn the video off after like 10 minutes or so. But we come back a lot to, you know, businesses making business decisions on this show, with a lot of matters related to the game, and I think Channel Fireball was completely within their right to say, look, we don't want to be associated with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something, you know, I talked about this on Magic Mike's, you know, I don't understand the people who don't quite understand that, you know, even us, you know, like to some degree, we represent Gathering Magic. We represent Cool Stuff Inc. And if we do something incredibly stupid in our personal lives, either one of those sites has the right to be like, you know what, we just don't see it for you anymore. You know, you become a liability. You could be costing us money. It's not personal, but this is a thing. This is something we understand. And I think the audience sometimes doesn't really understand that, you know, with regards to a lot of these guys, these are not your friends from around the block. You know, they may look like you. They may dress like you. They may have this story of like, oh, you know, last week he was playing F&M and this week he's playing GPs. No, he represents a website now. And with that comes a certain responsibility. And if that's something that that content provider is not up for, then maybe you need to not get in the game, or maybe you need to not go to a major website. But that is something that you do kind of sign up for, as much as I hate that phrase, when you agree to work for a big site like this. And I just don't understand why that keeps coming up of, you know, these sites shouldn't be able to do this. No, that they should absolutely be able to do this. And I don't understand why we come back to that subject every time. Somebody always acts surprised that these websites, you know, exercise that option. Speaking of websites exercising option, this is not one of our top 10, but did you see that BBD got let go?
I saw that. I obviously don't know the context, but I enjoyed his work, and I'm sad to see him go.
Mm-hmm. Yes. He's definitely somebody that I've watched grow. Like, I remember when I interviewed him on the Deck Tease, and I'll be completely honest, he was a little new. You know, like, I kind of had to pull some things out of him. You know, like, he wasn't the easiest person to interview, but I think that was because he was just sort of coming into, you know, his fame and his success as a Magic player. And since then, I've watched him become more well-spoken, more outspoken, and just a better player, and it's been really great for me to watch his journey. And so I was very surprised when he posted that Facebook post and said that they didn't renew his contract. So I was like, what? Like, and also too, I felt a little surprised given the people that they still have running for them, where it's like, you got rid of BBD, but you got this young man? Like, and so I wish him the best, and I was very surprised that it happened, and I can't imagine he'll have a hard time finding someone to pick him up. Number 8, Alesha, Magic's first transgender character. This one affected me personally with the release of Fate Reforged, I believe it was. We got to meet the cons from the past, and Alesha, who smiles at death, was one of them. Alesha had her origin story on Uncharted Realms, and we found out that Alesha was, in fact, transgender. And this was something that was controversial. I don't understand why, but, you know, there were people who praised Wizards for, you know, broadening diversity, and then there were people who thought that this was just sort of a cheap ploy, that it was sort of shoehorned in, that there was no real precedent for this. I was really happy to see this, you know, to see a card that represented me. And also, the origin story was done so well. You know, they didn't fall on a lot of the tropes where it's like, oh, she's a courtesan, she's had this terrible life, and she's sort of, you know, they handled it very well. You know, you tend to see a lot of really bad tropes when it comes to trans characters. And also too, you saw that the Mardu really accepted her for being who she was. You know, they really didn't look down on her for it. It really came down to her prowess as a warrior. I was just happy with it on all fronts.
Yeah, I enjoyed the story, too. I'm not too much of a Vorthos, and I don't read Uncharted Realms regularly, but when I heard about the buzz about this piece, I had to read it, and I thought it was really well done. I mean, aside from, you know, the fact that they're looking to be more inclusive and more diverse, which is obviously great, I thought, like you said, Aaron, the story made a lot of sense, and I think it didn't just teach us about Alesha as a character, but it taught us a lot about the Mardu culture, which, you know, meant a lot to the Vorthoses, I'm sure.
Yeah. I thought it was also great because it gave people something to point to and say, you know, so when people were having these discussions on places like Salvation, you know, they were able to say, you know, transgender like Alesha. Like, I feel like people accept things more and are willing to try to understand things more when they have an example that they can point to. And so for a while there, they were pointing to Ashiok and be like, oh, transgender folks. I mean, like, Ashiok? And it was like, no, that's more gender neutral, or like, you know, no. But, you know, now people point and say, oh, you mean like Alesha? And you're like, yes, yes. And that makes a really great starting point to have conversations when people are interested in trying to learn more. Number 7 was Goyfgate. We were actually in Vegas when this happened, and for those who don't remember, Pascal Maynard is a Canadian Magic player. He was in the top 8, there was a draft, and in the pack that he was passed, there was a foil Tarmogoyf. And Pascal decided to take the Goyf, which led to outrage from the community, and surprisingly from a lot of pros. Some pros even went so far as to say that, like, he was an insult to the game, or like it was bad for the game, or he was a terrible, how can you call yourself a pro player? Bay was one of them. It was the only time in my life that I faltered. I was just like, Reed,
no.
But to his defense, he did an amazing apology that was sincere. So I was able to be his fan again. But he did get a lot of flack for this, and this was big. What did you guys think of this?
I think that, you know, his decision it's hard to say what anyone would have done until they were put exactly in his position. So, you know, I think it's cool that he did put up the card for charity and everything. I thought that that was really awesome. And so I wish that some of the pro players had not opened up their mouths and just started flying off the handle until they knew the whole story. You know, especially it's like, he's not a bad guy. So he took a card that was worth like a shit ton of money, wouldn't you? I probably would, you know, if it was me. So, you know, I think it all ended up the way that it should have. I just wish that people had not said some of the things that they did.
Yeah, and it was kind of presented in the article as like Wizards setting him up for this decision, which I don't think happened.
It was Melissa DeTora. First Goyfgate, then the spoilers. She's had us fooled this whole time.
That innocent girl. And I don't know. I think some people kind of showed some true colors, which was sad, I think, to see. But I'm glad that the whole thing blew over, and it seemed like things went well for him in the long run, even though he had to put up with a bunch of bullshit throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I remember in his apology, he said the reason why he took the Goyf in the first place was because the money that he could get from it would allow him to play in more GPs, and I believe he went on to, what, he won another GP later in the year, right?
Oh no, he won the next GP. Like, he went to Buenos Aires and won it.
Yeah. So there you go. Everything went according to plan.
This was basically his version of Taylor and Kanye. You know, when Kanye stole Taylor's microphone and she had that burst of popularity, this was his moment. This was his moment. A lot of people didn't even know who Pascal was. This put him on the map. And you brought up a really good point, Hallie. This endeared him to the average player, because a lot of people assume that these guys are just made of money. And you do see some pros who are able to grind out one event after another, and nobody really asks them, like, how they pay for it. You know, some of these guys do have appearance fees, and maybe they have jobs and things like that, but there is this assumption that if you're doing this, that you can just naturally afford it. And so for Pascal to come forward and be like, I'm not like y'all. Like, you know, I have to pay for this. This is not expensive. You know, he really appealed to the everyday player who was able to relate to him and be like, you know what? I would have done it too. Like you said, Chris, give me $500 and a card. I'm down. You know, and I think that really opened him up to a wider fan base. And I think this was a really important moment for his career. And it was nice to see him sort of ride that momentum. Mm-hmm. So, because the truth is, you know, you do see some pro players that after a while, they start to get almost kind of alien. You know, they just start to lose their touch with, like, what we go through as everyday players. And, you know, you sometimes, you'll hear them talk and just be like, you don't play at the kitchen table very much, do you? Like, you don't know what we go through. And I think that really showed in this example. Topic number six, or number six, was Oathgate, which just happened very recently, which was the burst of leaks that we experienced from Oath of the Gatewatch. Did you guys happen to check out the interview with Hélène Bergio?
I didn't get a chance yet, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I enjoyed it. I thought she was pretty clear, but apparently some people felt otherwise. So there's still I'm seeing a lot of people on my feed now that the official spoilers are coming out, and they're like, I don't know if I should retweet this because Helen's going to ban me. And I'm like, that's not how this
it's
go
like
back
the
and
opposite of what she said.
Thank you. I was like, go back and listen to it again. I understand that the sound quality wasn't great, but I've really kind of had it with these people that really didn't listen, where, you know, she talked about how she used a really good metaphor. She kind of compared it to like a contagion or like a virus, and she was talking about patient zero and how, like, you know, the immediate source, and how once something is released to the internet at large, you are kind of immune to all of those things. And I don't understand how people could say they listen to it and then still go on Twitter and make a lot of these really stupid remarks. But on a positive note, Roberto had his baby.
I know.
Yes.
Yay! So his cute wife was due. They had the baby a month early, so congratulations to Roberto. Very cute baby. Mm-hmm. Number five, birthing pod banned in Modern. Oh.
Saw this coming from a mile away.
So for those who don't know, if you play in Modern, there was a Modern Pro Tour earlier this year, and to kind of keep that Pro Tour interesting, they decided to ban Birthing Pod. Did you guys see this coming? Like, Hallie, you said you did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what was your indication that this was coming?
People have just been talking about it for years and years. The pod decks were everywhere in, like, 2013. I know Sam Pardee was one of the original pod innovators, and ever since, I believe he won GP Portland with it, ever since then, pod was just kind of everywhere, and it was just winning so many tournaments and consistently doing well and hating out a lot of other decks that I just think its time came.
Right when I was about to play it. I mean, I had been playing it, and I'd been playing, like, Rhinos and Wingmate Rocks, and it was just so much fun. Like, I didn't even care if I won. I just got to do cool shit, and that's all I wanted to do. I was sad when Pod was banned, but I wasn't outraged. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I have another deck to fall back on. I would have been a lot more upset if I didn't have another deck to fall back on, but I was sad to see Pod go.
Yeah. I knew that it was time for Pod to go when people started podding into Obsidot Ghost Council. Where it was like, okay, you've gone too far. Like, I'm fine with you podding into, like, an Avalanche Riders. I'm fine with you podding into, like, a Huntmaster. Like, I'm okay with that. But when you're podding into a card that costs, what, 2 white and 3 black? And it's just like, it ain't no thing. Like, no, you gotta go. Like, this is out of hand. And so I was not surprised to see it go. I was not expecting. And I still think it's funny that people won't let the dream die. Mm-hmm. Faux Pod is still a thing. You still have people out there that want nothing more than to win the game with a Kitchen Finks and a +1/+1 counter. And some people just can't let go. And God bless them.
Yeah. Sometimes you go to tournaments and they're like, I played Pod before it was banned and
the worst.
Yeah, it's just like cue Barbara Streisand, like, in the background. It's like, what the hell? Oh my god. It's like, it's okay. It'll be okay.
But have you guys ever won with a Kitchen Pinks in a 1/1 counter? Because that shit feels good.
Mm-hmm.
No.
No, see, I played Death Cloud, where I won with a Kitchen Pinks and the -1/-1 counter.
Mm.
Yeah.
But now you're a blue mage. Maybe we just need to try the +1/+1.
I don't even play anything that makes counters in blue. Is that even a blue thing?
No.
No.
But you could still do it.
But yeah, the theory was you'd play Kitchen Finks and Death Cloud, and then you Death Cloud them for 5, and then you sacrifice your Kitchen Finks, and it comes back, and then they have no land, and then you just peck away at them with the Kitchen Finks. That feels really good. I'm alone here. Okay. You're like, ew, Death Cloud. Number 4 on the list of top 10 stories, the rising cost of Standard. At one point, there was a $1,000 Standard deck. I think Jace's are down now to, what, 60?
Only 60.
Only 60. Fetchlands are up there. Polluted Deltas are hovering in the $25 to $30 range. Sora Flooded Strands. Den Protectors, $13 to $15 now. People are predicting that this should go away once Khans of Tarkir rotates, but people feel like sort of the psychological damage has been done. There have been reports that FNM attendance has been down for Standard.
Yep, that's true at my store.
Okay. You know, what do you guys take away from this? You know, like, how can we avoid this going forward? And it doesn't sound like it scared you away from Standard.
I don't know. I was fortunate enough that I got to draft a lot during cons, and I just happened to have all the fetch lands and, you know, all the cards that I needed, pretty much. And a lot of people who didn't were kind of left out. I actually ran into a girl who used to play at my FNM recently, and I asked her, like, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. What have you been up to? And she was just like, oh, I didn't feel like buying 4 Gideons, so I'm not playing Standard for a little while. And it just makes me sad whenever I hear people say that, because I still really enjoy the format, and I just wish more people were able to play it.
Yeah, I was trying to find a deck to play for Oakland still, because I'm a procrastinator, and that's what I do.
You still don't have a deck?
I theorize in my brain a lot, but I just haven't decided on anything.
Translation, she's watching Netflix and eating pizza.
Well, it's more like puppy chow than pizza, but yes. So I texted Brooke and Kobe, who are the people I test with. And I was like, so do you guys have a deck for me? Like, I'm leaving Monday and I work every day until then. So could you just help a girl out? Or, but I think they got my back, so... yeah, it's just, I don't want to invest in, like, any cards. I have, like, most of the fetch lands, I think all of the fetch lands at this point, but it's all the other cards that are just, I mean, I don't want to pay money for Jace's. I don't know. Standard right now is an apathetic time for me, so I hope that, with Oath coming out, I get more rejuvenated for Standard.
Mm-hmm.
The tricky thing about standard, you know, and I say this to somebody who does have those cards, you know, it really does make a difference. You know, I know we talked before about, you know, red being a safety valve and, you know, people like to throw around these budget brews, but the power level of these cards is so much and so high that, like, you almost don't want to bother. Like what drove me to Esper Dragons was I was just sort of trying out all these decks and everything felt like a worse version of something else. And it was like, you know, I was playing Ollie's four-color deck and it was like, well, if you want to play Rhinos, just play Abzan. And if you want to play with Dragons, play Esper Dragons. And so when I did move on to Esper Dragons and I actually did sleeve up Jace for myself, I kind of understood why the cards were so expensive. I'm not saying that they should be, but when you do play with Jace, you do kind of feel like you're getting that $60 worth. It's a really, really good card. And I can understand why people, if you're not playing with the best cards, why you don't even want to bother. Because if you're playing sort of a budget reanimator brew, and you don't have an answer to Gideon, and you don't have an answer to Jace, they're just going to kind of run away with the game. Like, those cards alone can really do that. And so I can understand why people who can't afford those cards just don't want to bother, because the cards are so powerful, you don't really have a chance.
Yeah, it's kind of like a tier one or bust feeling standard right now. Mm-hmm. So, not worthwhile for me to invest in when I can just keep leeching off of others.
But no. You do realize that this means you're going to do well. Like, we're going to be the ones, again, we were the good girls. We prepped, we had our decks ready, we practiced, and you're like, oh, I'm just going to show up on Tuesday. Yeah, you got that deck? Can I borrow that? Oh, hey, I'm going to top 32. Nice knowing y'all.
That's kind of my MO. That's what I did with those pre-TQs. I was like, oh, brand new deck, let's go round one. We'll do it, but no, I'll probably go like
04.
It's fine.
Oh, yeah, I'll remember that. number three on the list, story time takes center stage. I know that a lot of you don't identify as Vorthoses, but I do, and it seems like there was a lot more emphasis on the story this time around, and they, you know, Wizards started the weekly Uncharted Realms series, and there was more of an integration between creative and design, and you have things like Allied Hedron Network, which really go a long way towards sort of telling you how the story goes down. You know, me being a Vorthos, I really enjoy these things. Part of the reason I enjoy Oh so much is because of the capacity for Vorthos. Like, I really enjoy Kalitas, and I'm really excited to see what Obnixilis does, and so I think this was definitely a good thing in terms of making the game better. So we'll move along to a topic that we have not talked about on the show, and I'm pretty sure that we're not going to talk about this other than to say that it happened. But number two on the list of top 10 stories was the Zach Jesse incident. And I have to say, it's so funny how people will bring him into any discussion. Mm-hmm. Like, the oath leaks were happening. Oh, this is just like they did with Zach Jesse. No, girl, no. Or Magic Puzzle Quest is released. Well, I bet Zach Jesse can't play it. It's like, oh, people look for any reason to get him in the conversation. I don't understand. The only thing I do want to say is that when this happened, when he was suspended from the game, lifetime ban, yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. When this happened, I think we were all kind of in agreement that we weren't going to talk about this. And it wasn't something I had to even broach to you. I think we all sent the email, or we were kind of all on the same page of, like, we just don't want to talk about this. And I know people were surprised because we are a cast of women and people really wanted to hear our opinions about this. I think people were really surprised that we didn't. And I know for me personally, I'm really glad that we didn't. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. I feel like this was a subject that was so sensitive and that we really didn't have all of the facts. And there were already so many people with uneducated opinions on this topic, like, to the point where reading them made my brain hurt. And I just didn't really want to contribute to that discussion. Like, there are some things I admit that I'm fine talking about when I don't know all the facts. I'll freely admit that. But this was something where it was like, oh, no. Like, I am so not qualified to talk about, you know, sexual assault and legal issues, and just, I am not qualified for this. I'm not going to even bother. And to be frank, I really wish more people would have said that. I really wish more people would have been like, no comment, I don't have all the information, and instead it was just one bad opinion, one bad decision after another, and so I'm really glad that we just didn't go anywhere near it, because we just couldn't really do the topic justice. Mm-hmm. No pun intended, but I understand it was a big issue, and then I'm glad that we're over it for the most part. The number one story of 2015, according to Hipsters of the Coast, and not just because we're involved, is gender equality. They even gave us a shout-out, and our little logo was featured, so thank you, hipsters. Gender equality was definitely the topic of 2015. Gabby Spartz got the ball rolling in April. Our show came out in around that time. We came out in March, so we were right there, you know, when it happened. Megan Wolf wrote her article in June. Kate Donnelly from Hipsters wrote an article in October. There were more non-cisgendered male producers, J.D. and Clem Perrins, Jess Sterba. I do feel like this was a good year for Women Magic. I do feel like we made some progress. Alesha was obviously a thing. And I did get some feedback. We talked a lot about coverage last week and how there isn't a woman in the booth yet. I can tell you guys about this once we're done recording, but all I can say is that I received some information from some credible sources, and I can say that 2016 things should be turning around in that area. That's all I can say. Not me personally, because can't put me in a coverage booth. Nothing good would come from that, but I can say that there are one or two women that will be getting work in that department. I'll tell you guys once we're done recording. But so what did you guys think? You know, we started the show in March. We're here in December. We've been doing this about 9 months. You know, how do you all feel, like, from where we were to where we are now? Have you guys noticed a difference?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just in every area. When you go to a GP, there are more women there. When you look on Twitch, there are more women streaming. When you look at the internet, there are more women talking about magic and more women playing. I went to a coffee shop last week, and there were two girls who were there with their dad who had just bought them a dual deck at the toy store down the street, and they were both arguing over who got to be Kiora because Kiora was so awesome. Like, I just keep seeing these things over and over and over again, and it makes me so happy, and I just think 2016 is going to be even bigger for us.
Okay. Yeah, I was really excited about this year as a whole. Being invited to be on, you know, this podcast was a really big step for me personally, and doing something that I've wanted to do for a long time, and now I have an outlet to do it, and I'm really glad that, I mean, I feel like every GP I go to, I'm like surprised. I'm like, wow, look at all the women. I'm not the only one. It's great. And so, you know, I'm just constantly surprised, and I think that, you know, like Hallie, 2016 will be awesome.
Yeah, I have high hopes for 2016 as well, and I just think of all the things that, you know, happened this year, and it seems to all be moving in a very positive direction, and I'm so pleased that a lot of the magic community has embraced diversity more this year. It feels like there's more women showing up to tournaments, or even, you know, in my local scene, you know, people are starting to kind of poke their heads out, maybe stop being, you know, just casual players or just kitchen table players, and they're coming and they're playing now, and I just think that that's so awesome, and I'm always very excited to tell other women about our podcast and other resources, to be like, yeah, other people like do these things, they like them too, come and hang out with us, it'll be awesome. So I can't wait to see what happens within this next year.
Yeah, I love seeing the feedback from people that are relieved that we're out there and that people like Gabby are out there. I had a young lady tweet me yesterday named Ashley, and Ashley was literally like, oh, thank God, I didn't even know about your show. My husband's a game store owner, and I have to listen to nothing but dudes all day. I'm so glad you guys are here. And I'm pretty sure she didn't sound that, like, depraved, but, you know, she was just so excited. She was like, I didn't know. She's like, I didn't know that there were these voices out there. And, you know, we take it for granted because, you know, some of us are really tuned into social media, but we forget that not everybody is as connected as we are, and so we just take it for granted that we look in our homepage and we see Jadine and we see Kate and we see Jess and we see Serena. We just assume, we don't think anything of it, but for a lot of people it's still like a dawning moment to them where they're like, holy shit. And you know, I had two people actually tweet me in the last couple of days that were like, can you give us more women to follow? And I'm like okay, here's MJ, here's Gabby, here's Elantris, here's Morgan, go, like, go, my little pets, you know, just spreading the gospel. Like, I'm always so happy to see that. And, you know, I want to talk about you guys on a personal level, because again, we've been doing this for 9 months, and as sort of the grizzled veteran, I've been making content for a really long time. You know, I've had a large following. I've watched your followings explode in the last 9 months. I think, Hallie, you cracked 1,000 followers the other day. What has this been like for you? Hallie's like, I did? What has this been like for you being on this ride of the show, you know, we started the show in March. We really didn't have any expectations. And now on Friday, we're launching a Patreon. Like, what has this journey been like for you?
For me, it's been a really big adjustment, I think. I'm a really introverted person. I try to be a really private person. And, you know, being out there and being on a show and, you know, having to talk about your life all the time was something that I had to get used to. I'm not going to lie. It's been like, this has been a transitional year for me, for sure. But I've been really glad to find, you know, a lot of like-minded people in the community and to, you know, be able to talk about issues that I've cared about for a really long time. I would say, like, my biggest takeaway from this year is just, I guess this is broader than even just the show or magic in general, but just sort of learning what my limits are and realizing that just because, you know, I feel like I can do anything, you know, I have a lot of skills and I have a lot of strengths and a lot of things that I want to pursue, I can't do everything at the same time, and sort of like finding that balance of like, okay, so I have the show and articles and streaming and all these other things that I do and also practicing for tournaments, you know, making all the time for everything has been difficult for me. It's been a lot to fit into my schedule, but I feel like coming out on the other side of that, I have a really good plan, you know, going into the next year. I feel like I'm really on top of everything and I'm ready to up my game for 2016.
Yeah, I definitely feel like having this outlet was the next step that I needed to take in my magic career. Like, I was getting competitive. I wanted to do more, but I didn't really know how to do more from Montana. Poor state of Montana. This show has done a lot for me. Like, I was not very busy in the first half of the year, and I put a lot of time and effort into magic. And now with vet school, I am really busy, but this still gives me, like, a reason to keep reading all these articles and keep into content. Because I feel like without the podcast, like, I mean, I haven't been to FNM in a really long time, and it feels like I might have just dropped magic, which is not something I would have intended to do, and it's not something I would have wanted to do. And so being on this show has definitely made me like, yes, this is something I love and I want to keep involved in it, even if it means giving up sleep or giving up dinner one night or whatever it may be. I don't really give up dinner. I love food. But the show has taught me a lot about how people perceive you when you're not aware of things. Like when I was setting up for Vegas and, you know, the show is getting really just taking up steam, I was doing setup with a bunch of other judges, and one person was like, are you Katie from the Girlfriend Bracket? And I was like, oh my god, have I said anything stupid? Like, what are they thinking of me right now? But just being more self-aware and I think has been really healthy, and just, you know, having everybody take more time to think about what they're saying has been a really valuable thing for me to learn.
Wow. I don't even know if I can follow either of those, but I am just so grateful for being on the show and having the show introduce me to so many new people. You know, we did so much networking when we were in Vegas, and we got to meet all the MTG Focus people and, you know, other content creators, and it was just so awesome to get to know other people that are so excited about something just like you are. And I love going to events and talking to people about magic, and especially if they ask, you know, about the podcast, and I'll tell them about it, or, you know, just meeting new friends. And for me, magic is such like a social activity. Like, I've just met so many amazing people within the last 9 months. It's just unbelievable. And I told myself that this coming year, I want to go to more events. I want to meet more people. I want to just keep trying to be, you know, good enough for myself in magic and just keep having fun. I took too many things like way too seriously before, and I just don't want to do that anymore. Magic should be something that's fun for me to do. It's not my career. I'm not going to be on the pro tour, and I'm fine with that. Like, I just want to have a good time and do something that makes me happy. And I'm just so grateful that the game has allowed me to meet so many awesome, wonderful people and enjoy a game that I just really love.
The biggest thrill for me has been watching people see what I see, you know? You know, when I thought about doing the show, I'll be honest, I picked you for, you know? Hallie, I knew you. I already liked you. But I saw things in each of you that I wanted other people to see. And even with the guests we've had on the show, you know, I don't support people that I don't actually like. You know what I mean? Like, we're not just having random people like, oh, you're conscious and you're female. Come on the show. No, these are women that I like, that I personally support. And again, these are women that I see things in. Like, when we met Serena at States, I was like, she absolutely belongs on the Pro Tour. Like, I just looked at her and I knew. Meeting, you know, or talking to Haley Gentili, so brilliant and so smart. And just, you see that glimmer in people. And, you know, the whole point of the show was to shine that spotlight on other people. I've had the spotlight for some time. I really don't need any more, to be quite honest. You know, but, you know, inviting you guys in, I saw something in you three, and I wanted other people to see it. And it's been great for me to see Katie get opportunities to guest star on other shows, and to see people say, my favorite cast member is Hallie, my favorite cast member is Chris. You know, to see people see what I see in you guys, where I knew that you guys were funny, I knew that you guys had opinions, I knew that you guys were great people. And so I love sort of sitting back and watching people. Like, when we went to Vegas, and we went to the Puka party, and there were people that were like, where are your girls? And I was like, oh, they're in the corner being introverts. And they were like, well, we kind of want to meet them. Like, we know you, Aaron, and you're cool, but we really want to meet your girls. And that was really cool for me to sort of sit back and watch people come up to you and say, oh my God, you're Hallie. Oh my God, you're Chris. That was a thrill for me. And I love watching. I love the fact that you guys have, you know, kind of carved out your own niches in this community. So, and even the other women that we've had on, you know, especially after we had Serena on, there were so many people that were like, she's amazing. And it's like, I know. And I think that's the whole point of all of this, is that we've known what we were capable of. You know, we've known that we were good players. We've known that we were, you know, capable of creating content. And now the world is just sort of cluing into it. Gabby Sparks has been here forever. She didn't just show up and become good at the game. She's been good at the game. She's been a powerhouse. And, you know, that's the one thing I like to remind people, is that all of these great women who are coming up through the ranks have been here forever. And, you know, even bigger than the show, it's great to see them just sort of get their due. So, New Year's is coming up. I know, Hallie, you talked a little bit about what you are going for 2016. Katie and Chris, what are you trying to do for 2016? I know, Chris, you said you wanted to be a little more fun, like kind of loosen up a little bit. Katie, do you have any big goals?
I do, and it feels like quite a big goal for myself. I've never made a magic goal like this before, but with the flashback drafts, I am going to get over my fear of Modo, and my goal is to do one draft a week for the whole year. And like right now, I play Magic every couple weeks. You know, I read articles and stuff every week, but I want to make the time and I want to do it. So I'm going to give myself a few weeks off throughout the year, because there will inevitably be times where I can't do it. So I just can't do it.
Like if you're giving a bear a root canal, you know.
Yeah. Or I think I'm going to Europe in May. So
awesome.
I won't be able to, you know, get that all together while I'm gone. But so my goal is to do one draft a week, and I'd like to stream a couple of them. I'm not going to set the goal for myself to stream all of them, because that's overreaching for me. But to do that, to make a little bit more time for Magic, but keep my life balanced, is my aim for 2016.
Yeah, my goal for 2016 is actually sort of the opposite of Chris's. I would like to get a little bit more serious. I don't necessarily want to be on the Pro Tour, but I definitely have gotten a lot better. You know, since I started playing Standard, I've gotten a lot better at, you know, kind of looking at things through more of a competitive lens. You know, being able to look at something and say, this is a worse version of something else. You know, is this card really better than this card? Not just looking at a card and wanting to play it because it's cute, really saying, does this card have a purpose in the deck? Not being afraid to try other cards. I tried a Dragonlord's Prerogative the other day in my sideboard, going into it going, I don't need any more card draw. What the hell is this card doing here? And being really excited by it afterwards. And be like, okay, Dragonlord's Prerogative saves. It's a fun card. And I think part of that also comes from being, you know, receiving an invite to an invitational, you know? Even if it was because I saved up enough points. You know, I never dreamed that I could go to an invitational. I just assumed that was something that was outside of my reach. And the fact that I get to go to an invitational next year feels amazing. amazing. And the fact that I could get enough points to go to a TCG Invitational was just like, what? And these were always events that I looked at and sort of, you know, did jokingly, or I would do just for a story for the podcast. And now it's like, no, if I go to an Invitational next year, I want to go. Like, you know, like, I want to have a good standard deck. I want to feel like I've got a shot. And I think both of those things kind of, you know, made me look at the game a little differently, where now when I see a really cute deck, I can recognize that it's a cute deck, but I don't necessarily need to run out and build it. It's like, nope, I've got my Jaces, I've got my Esper Dragons, I don't need to mess with all of that. And so I'd like to continue looking at the game through that focus next year.
Yeah, I set aside 5 goals that I wanted to do for Magic. Attending more events. I want to maybe get a better computer so I can try to start streaming. I want to play Legacy, finish my EDH deck, and then the last one I've kept on the DL, but my goal by the end of 2016 is to be at least level 1 for judging.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. Yep.
I hope I could do it.
You can totally do it.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Oh, God, I can't wait to see your picture. Like, that awesome picture of you, like, standing proudly with, like, the profile shot.
And you know,
oh,
I get my hair did and, like, everything done beforehand.
You would have, like, you know how when you look at, like, magazines and then, like, so they have the person on the cover, and then when you're looking at the table of contents, they're like, you know, glasses by blah, lipstick by blah. Like, you would be the only judge in the history of the DCI to, like, you know, foundation by Kat Von D, lipstick by Chanel. Just get this look. I would be a judge, but there's 2 things getting in my way. 1, I cannot keep cat hair off black clothing. So I wouldn't want to be known as the judge covered in cat hair. That's not good. And then they also won't let me bedazzle my clothing. Because the outfit's kind of blah. And I think the last time I saw Halivis, I was like, so do you guys have any policy against, like, buttons or gems or anything? He's like, you can't do that. And I'm like, ugh. So... yeah, no on both counts, but Godspeed if you want to do it. Listener question this week. Send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Again, it doesn't even have to be about Magic. We're happy to help you with anything that you're going through. You don't even have to give your name. If you want to be anonymous, we can make up a really silly name for you. This email came to us from Eric, and it's a very simple question, but I think it's one that matters given that we're going to a GP next week. Next week?
Yes.
Yay!
Bring it on.
I want to do my Oprah voice, like, GP Oakland! So much fun. So Eric says, hey, I was planning on attending GP Charlotte this coming year, assuming they have it, since I heard Wizards suspended most of the level 3 judges in the Southeast. Shade. With my green-white samurai deck. I know that it isn't one of the high-tier decks, and I'm not going with the goal of winning it all, though it would be an extremely pleasant surprise if I did, but I want to give it my best try. That said, should I go if I play that deck, or would I be wasting my opponent's time since I would be worried about that? Thank you for reading this.
Now I want to know what's in his green-white samurai deck. I've never heard of this before.
Me neither.
Yeah, sounds really cool.
I think he absolutely should go for it. I mean, I'm obviously a competitive player. Katie's a competitive player. We talk about top decks a lot on the show. But to be honest, GPs are changing so much. Attendance is going up. There's a broader spectrum of players who show up to GPs. And I really don't think there's a wrong way to go about playing. I think, you know, if you have any goals, like if you want to, you know, win 2 matches with your green-white samurai deck, and that's your goal for the weekend, absolutely go for it. If you just want to take it for a spin and maybe play against a bunch of different decks, do it. Like, I don't think there's any wrong way to go about it.
Yeah, I just want to say, Eric, that you deserve to be at a GP just as much as the next person, no matter what deck you're playing. If you're playing 59 forests and 1 arbor elf, which I guess is probably not illegal, but, you know, if you're, no matter what you're playing, you deserve to be there just as much as the next person, and you deserve to have fun just as much as the next person, regardless of if you're competitive, if you're the most casual person that the world has ever seen, you know, as long as your deck is legal, you should be there playing. So, I think that, you know, fuck the haters and go do your thing.
Yep. I can't agree more, because when I was reading the email, all I could think of was, like, who gives a shit about your opponent? Be like, you go do your thing. play your deck. If you are into it and you want to get more practice, especially during, like, especially with some more, like, high-level decks, go for it. What are you going to lose? You know, you're probably going to get a sweet playmat out of the deal. You'll get to meet some cool people, and you'll get to try your deck out. So I see no issue with that. Go have fun. YOLO.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. And also, who's to say that, you know, with Modern being as diverse as it is, who's to say that your deck doesn't have a chance? I never saw this Processor deck happening. I don't think we all saw Lantern Control happening. I think we all watched those feature matches sort of in awe. Like, is this really, oh God, this is happening? Chris, you faced it how many times now?
Enough. Ugh,
deck. You know, who's to say that you're not playing the breakout deck, and who's to say that your deck can't do well? You know, you could very well run your deck against Twin, run your deck against Burn, run your deck against Tron. You know, if you can find a way to make that deck have a chance against those other decks, I think you absolutely have a chance of doing well. And even if you don't do well, you know, they say that you get better by playing people better than you. So, you know, again, if you want that deck to be better, run it up against some of the players at the GP. You're bound to get some really great experience. And like you guys said, I think the atmosphere of GPs is changing, and you absolutely should go and just have a really good time. Before we go, I wanted to talk a little bit about our Oakland plans, because we are going to be there next week. I don't even know, like, what I'm doing. Like, I know that we're doing the main event on Saturday, but, like, have you guys looked at the side event schedule? Like, what are we going
to
do?
I am going to try to do a lot of Modern while we're there. There's a Modern showdown at 11 o'clock that seems pretty sweet, and I think you get a playmat, so I'd have an extra one. Yay! And then I think there's two other Modern side events, on one later on Friday, and then one on Sunday, I think. And they're only $25, no big deal. So my goal is to play in some Modern events and get some sweet-ass cards signed.
I'm not sure yet, but I saw there are a lot of on-demand side events. Those are usually my thing, because I like the flexibility of being able to play Magic and also getting to hang out with your friends that you don't get to see all the time. So I will probably do on-demand Standard and or Draft. Probably look into some of the Last Chance Trials also, because I sadly only have one buy and would really like another one. But I'm not really sure. I'm trying to leave the weekend as open as possible.
Yeah, I'm going to bring a Standard deck, and I'm going to bring a Modern deck, and I'm going to play my Standard deck and my Modern deck. And I have not gotten farther than that, but it's also pretty open at this point. But I'm getting into San Francisco on Monday, so I'm hoping to do other fun things before the weekend starts.
Do you have any interest in these Oath of the Gatewatch premiere events?
I thought about it, and then I realized that I'm probably going to day two. So then I started thinking about it.
Oh, hello.
Okay, so here's the thing. And this is something that I learned from Jerry Thompson, who I recently found out is not going to be living in Seattle anymore. And it makes me sad, because he was a cool guy. I would run into Jerry Thompson at PPTQs, like, all the time. And because he left Wizards and he stayed in Seattle and played in a lot of PPTQs. And whenever I would run into him, he would be like, oh, hey, how are you doing? And I would be like, oh, I'm like 1-1 and, you know, but I brought my draft sleeve so I can maybe do a side event. And he was like, no, you need to stop telling yourself that. You need to tell yourself that you're going to win, and then you're going to go and you're going to win. And I was just like, and it took, like, a couple times of him, of having these interactions with him, and him telling me that I had the wrong mentality, before I was just like, oh, yeah, I need to, it's all about how you conceptualize it. Like, if you go into an event thinking, oh, I'm not going to make day two, so I'm going to, you know, take some extra cash out of the ATM for the Super Sunday series and just plan on doing that. Like, you almost set yourself up to not accomplish what you want to accomplish. So if I say things like, oh, I'm not doing this because I'm going to make day two, it's not necessarily me being arrogant, maybe being a little arrogant, but I'm just trying to psych myself up for it.
We actually have that same, like, mantra in vet school. Like, before we take tests, we're all like, I am smart and I know what I am doing. I am smart and I know, and we say it like 10 times. And yeah, there's actually research that says that if you even if you have no fucking clue what you're doing, if you say it, you typically do better on whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. So I'm all about that confidence.
I don't know. I like Hallie's approach, but I have to say, if I was sitting down to play you at a GP and you sat down and were like, I'm smart, I'm good, I'm going to do well, I'm smart, I'm good, like, judge, my opponent is creepy.
For Cocoa Puffs.
Creepy.
Like, you keep that to yourself. But I'm actually bringing three decks. I am bringing Standard, Modern, and Legacy because there is the Modern Showdown on Friday, which I'm also really excited about. I can play ad nauseum there. Saturday is the Standard main event. I also found out there's a big Legacy event on Saturday, so I was this close to, like, swapping over to that. I was like, I could play Dredge. No. I've been playing Standard for a month now. I've been practicing. We're going to go ahead and see this through. But Sunday, there is a Legacy event at 1 p.m. And so I think I might play Legacy on Sunday. So I'll get a little bit of everything each day. And I'm really looking forward to it. I actually got a Facebook message before we recorded from a young lady who'd like to interview us.
Oh, cool.
So we have interview requests, damn it. Yeah. Sweet. So got to keep our schedule somewhat open. But I think Oakland's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of our friends are going to be there. Gabby will be there. Amy will be there. Serena will be there. Courtney and Andrew will be there. We're just going to be surrounded by a lot of love. So I hope it goes well.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem about Oakland will be that there's a lack of, like, meals. Because so many people are like, can we have dinner? Can we do this? Can we have lunch? Can we get breakfast? And I'm like, there's not enough meals in the day. I mean, I could make enough meals happen, but I think it'll be a great weekend.
Just eat a lot of small meals.
Yeah. Not enough time is a really valid concern. Like, I can't help but feel like this is almost going to be like Vegas, where I will leave having done so much and still feel like I missed everything. Mm-hmm. Also, before we go, our Patreon debuts on Friday. You guys have asked to support us, and we are giving y'all that opportunity to do that. We have some really great rewards. We have some really great goals that we would like to unlock. And so if you would like to support the show, we appreciate that. And again, there's no, you don't have to. You know, we understand if that's not your thing. The show is still here. Nothing changes in that regard. But if you do want to support us, it is available, and we really do appreciate that. If anybody's enjoyed the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/HalCanSan. I will be streaming on New Year's Day, I've decided. I was looking at my calendar for January and trying to come up with a regular schedule, and I was like, okay, so I'm going to be in Oakland this weekend, and the next weekend is the pre-release, and then there's release day, and then Vancouver. So I guess I'll pick, like, these 6 or 7 days when I'm available, and I'll stream on those days. So I am planning on streaming a couple times in the next month. You'll have to forgive me that my schedule is really hectic. There are lots of magic, crazy things going on. But I will be streaming, probably playing some Standard leading up to when I leave for Oakland. And, I don't know, maybe doing some drafts or trying some Modern. I know a lot of people have been trying to get me to play Pauper. I might build a Pauper deck. That'll be a lot of fun. And as always, you can find my articles here on Gathering Magic.
Wow. Hallie's doing so much with her life. I'm just watching Netflix and getting pretty challenged.
In Montana.
Where it is really freaking cold.
It's 23 degrees here.
It's like 0 degrees here.
Okay, it's worse in Montana. Wow.
Yeah, we were actually going to go out tomorrow night for New Year's, and I was like, well, I guess I'll wear my winter coat and some snow pants, and we'll just call it a day.
That's how you know you live in a cold state, when you rationalize getting out of bed by how cold it is. Where you're like, so I can go hang out with friends tonight, or it's 15 degrees. Do I like you enough to go out in 15 degrees? No.
Yeah, tomorrow's supposed to be like -5, and I was like, is it worth looking nice? I'm not convinced.
Girl,
it is.
Girl, bye. No.
So I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at meanmugger. That's MEANMUGGER. Or you can find me by email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ. K-R-I-Z. That's Yota Chris. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. And send me some cool pics. Katie, I'm looking at you.
My phone was across. I got it. It's coming.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitedistricts.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you so much for helping us make 2015 a really impressive year, and we look forward to next year. So talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.